Good morning, everyone. Here from Finland, and it is the 2nd of August. Or is it? Yeah, it's the 2nd of August, 2013, and we are nearing the end of what the Tibetan has written in this book. We also have the appendix ahead of us, which is a great compilation of important items from the Secret Doctrine and from a treatise on cosmic fire, and some quotations, of course, from this book gathered together under the subject. Sometimes I think it's best to study topically, but on the other hand, the integrated view that the Tibetan is presenting is often best with horizontal study. So we'll do both. We are dealing with the expression of a great being through a first-ray being, second-ray being, and third-ray being. And the expression of the will aspect of that being, of each one of them. We're working on the third-ray being now. And DK has told us that he is not going to deal with the lords of the 4th, 5th, 6th, and 7th rays, and we can work that out ourselves, how the will expresses through those rays, and how they work through the triangles of constellations, which are always in revolution, and which every processional age or so seem to revolve. But the lords of these constellations and the lords of certain rays have a great affinity. So as I said, it's probably unlikely at this time that Aries, Leo, and Capricorn, the lords thereof, will change their ray affiliation, because that seems to be their nature. Now, interestingly, when we were working with the first ray and the lords of constellations through which this first ray passes, and through which this first ray being works, we were working with Capricorn, and we find Capricorn again. Capricorn, as we know, distributes the third ray, and especially so when it comes to disciples and aspirants. As for people who are still part of the mass consciousness, then it is Cancer which distributes the third ray. This is a very demanding section of the book. He tells us we know so little about the will aspect, and here he is speaking actually of the will of the one about whom naught may be said, as that great being works through lesser ray beings who serve as its chakras and who epitomize their expression, I suppose, in the lords of the seven stars of the Great Bear. Well, let's put it like this. There are different aspects of the rays. There would necessarily have to be. From the will aspect, these rays are expressed through the Great Bear and in seven subdivisions through the rishis of the Great Bear. The Lord of the Great Bear itself is a much greater being than any one of the rishis. And then through the Pleiades, a great third ray is expressed, but through the seven sisters, the qualifications and distinctions of that third ray, the seven different types, especially from the intelligence perspective. And then from either Sirius, or as I begin to suspect, from the Little Bear, which is, I think, a higher prototype of Sirius, come seven more expressions, this time of the great love wisdom ray. And this love wisdom ray can express in seven modes, according to the seven sub-rays of seven stars which are contained within this constellation. As I say, whether it is the Ursa Minor, the Little Bear, or whether it is some way, in some way, Sirius. But I also suspect that the seven great stars of Orion may be involved. The 2-4-6 line is pretty well upheld by the Little Bear, Orion, and our seven solar systems, our local seven solar systems. And I also have talked about, have I not, that the term solar system can be a blind for constellation. I think it's both. That there are seven local stars, of which ours is one, and that these seven local stars form a constellation or a chakra in the one about whom naught may be said. But there are also seven great systems of stars, seven stellar systems, which are constellations and chakras in the one about whom naught may be said. And these seven are solar systems, of which our solar system or constellation is also one. So the term system can refer to a one star grouping, or to a grouping of a number of stars, of which seven are primary. We have here the working out of the conditioning will, sometimes called the will to initiate, the will to fulfillment, and the will, the conquering will, the will which conquers death. They are working out, these types of will are working out through each of the major three ray beings. And each of these beings, in wielding will, realizes itself to be working with the transcending will, with the transmitting will, with the transforming will, and finally with the transfiguring will, a fourfold progression. And I was proposing that this progression is found in relation to every ray, to the will expression through every ray, by every ray lord, and that the three types of will, which are the conditioning, the fulfilling, and the conquering, can be found in relation to every sign of the zodiac. But perhaps each sign has a special affinity with one or the other, just as in the first ray triangle, Aries has the special affinity with the conditioning will, conditioning life through circumstance. Leo has the special affinity with the will to fulfillment, and Capricorn with a will which conquers death. We're dealing with the great movement and power and intention of superior lives, lives superior even to the lords of the constellations. We have our lesser reflections here on our planet, and through Shambhala. But DK has given us a very big picture. Of course, he has also made it possible for us to look at the analogy here. We find these forms of will operating on a cosmic basis, at the very least coming from a cosmic entity, the Great Bear. and from one of his stars, but as I say, I feel that the stars are as if blinds for still greater entities that distribute a more powerful expression of the ray concerned. And then the analogy that we're given is in diagram 5. And we see how an inner light chart can be created for the individual human being, beginning with the monad as the cause, working through the spiritual triad and then through the human soul, and then through the transfiguring centers, which eventually transpose the man into the triadal worlds of true livingness. And this inner light chart, of course, would be different for every human being at different stages of evolution, and the rays would affect the chart, the powerful rays, and there would be degrees of unfoldment of each of the cross-hatched or blacked-out areas. Right now we just see that they are involved, but there are different degrees of involvement. So we've been tracing the will now and its expression, the ray will, as it were, through three types of will: conditioning, fulfilling, and conquering. And we've been watching this ray will expressed through a ray triangle. We are now in the third ray, a grouping of constellations, and again we're encountering Capricorn, but it's a different Capricorn than we encountered in the first, in relation to the first ray zodiacal triangle, and the first ray being expressing through it. Capricorn, this constellation stands for the influence which will carry the will of Shambhala to the hierarchy or to the world of initiates, giving them that dynamic and enterprising spirit which will enable them to carry forward to completion the will of God on earth. So we see there is always with the third ray the factor of working on earth with circumstances, with conditions in the three lower worlds. There's a downward pointingness to Capricorn, and it is a manifestational sign. It does carry to disciples and initiates the third ray. It also carries more, or transmits more, of the seventh ray at this time than any other constellation. So it orients the hierarchy towards the carrying out of the will, which came from the transcending source, carrying out of that will of God on earth. It was the angel born under Capricorn. Maybe that's a hint about the qualitative aspect of angels. Hints really the qualitative aspects of angels, which came to Christ in the Garden of Gethsemane and fused his individual will into the divine will, and thus enabled him to carry out his mission to completion. So Christ was greatly assisted, apparently, by this Capricornian angel. The angels can be agents of fusion, and sometimes I think in the presence of devas one feels that a unification with subtle energies is proceeding. Their presence brings about unification. Presence of the angels brings about unification. I can't get into all the variety of the different angels. Maybe there are some discrepancies, but in general, the kinds that are seemingly invoked during Masonic rituals, church rituals, rituals for the New Age seem to have this fusing power. So there is a great connection between Capricorn and the will. It is a major first ray sign, but also along the first ray line, it gives the will to manifest and the will to, under the third ray, and the will to manifest with perfection under the seventh ray. So it enabled him to carry out his mission to completion. It is not so much emphasized, the assistance that Christ, Lord Maitreya, received in the garden. But it is such a great moment, and one which we as human beings at our present stage of evolution hardly understand, and will understand increasingly as the will in us grows. Just as we understand the science of triangles as the effective triangle exchanges in our etheric body are established. So this was not only the revelation of divine love to the world, as the legend in the Master's archives goes on, he came to fabricate the gossamer thread which bound the two together and linked the place of the Most High, Shambhala, with the Holy City hierarchy. So there's a great will function in the Christ. We've seen that will is not just a matter of the first ray. There are different ray types of will. And we would err if we think, well, look, there are seven types of monads on the monadic plane. Each one has a particular type of will that it expresses. And we could attach the seven types of will we've been studying. We've studied three in general, the conditioning, fulfilling, and conquering. But we also have dealt with the ray types of will, the will to initiate, the will to unify, the will to evolve, the will to harmonize, the will to act, the will to cause, the will to express. And in relation to those types of will, we have initiation connected with the will to initiate. We have vision connected with the will to unify. We have education connected with the will to evolve. We have intuition connected with the will to harmonize. We have liberation connected with the will to act. We have idealism connected with the will to cause. We have organization connected with the will to express. These are very high matters. They are really understood by the members of the hierarchy. The old commentary, knowing there would be such a one, there being a necessity that such a one appear, speaks of him as he comes to fabricate the gossamer, thinnest of thin threads, which bound the two together and linked the place of the Most High with the Holy City. So, in fact, he was carrying out a function for hierarchy, even more than for humanity. The bridge between the holy place and the Holy of Holies was securely anchored, and hierarchy then could respond in much fuller knowledge of the will of God than heretofore. The holy place, hierarchy, and the Holy of Holies, he's using the old Hebrew terms here, Shambhala, was securely anchored. The will of God could now be carried to fruition. This, of course, to the great benefit of humanity, and maybe even, as we might say, for the sake of the survival of humanity. Who knows what the Christ was shown there in the garden about the future of humanity had he not decided to sacrifice and to intervene. Under the same symbolic teaching, we could say that the following terms distinguish the three rays with which we have been dealing. So ray one is the Holy of Holies, It represents the innermost sanctum, the dwelling place of the Most High. In our particular case, the Most High is Sanat Kumara. It represents spirit, life, energy, God, will, and identification, or seeing all things in the sameness. Not only seeing all things in the sameness, seeing all things in the sameness, but being all things in the sameness. We look here at the second ray, and it's called the holy place. It's always good to have these different terms giving a perspective on the different centers. It's the hierarchy and the secret place where light dwelleth. It has its own power, of course, but not the power of Shambhala. It is expression of soul, of consciousness, of light, and of love, and of initiations, interestingly, because the highest method of teaching for those on the second ray is the science of initiation. Is the science of initiation. Now, interestingly enough, the will to initiate and that type of will which is conditioning and also initiating is associated with the first ray. But this is, we're dealing with here initiation as an expansion of consciousness and a deepening and a fusing into a condition or a state which pre-exists, a merging. These are all more second-ray words. So it's not just the word itself that has to command our attention, but it is the particular nuance of the word. If the love is sufficient, there will be initiation. The barriers will fall away, melt away, and we will find ourselves on both sides of the door through the power of love. So through love and service, initiation is guaranteed. Love has that quality of omnipresence about it. I've recently realized, you know, between the second and third ray, I've often found many interchanges. Even though DK says they work with difficulty together, I think it's because in my own nature I have a lot of both of these rays. And I've seen recently that the omnipresence factor can be assigned to the second ray rather than the third, and the omniscience factor to the third ray rather than the second, although the other way around is also correct. So there are some terms that represent processes that seem to do double duty or duty in relation to more than one ray. There's such a fusion that goes on in the inner worlds, and we have the discriminating mind which tends to want to isolate one factor from another and is not cognizant of their ongoing fusion. It seems perhaps more secure for the mind to fix and place things so we can be clear about them and maybe control them. In a situation of constant fluidity, we seem to lose our control. But reality, I think, is more like that, a condition of great fluidity and constant merging. After all, everything that we seem to see as distinct is really but one thing, and we have to understand the way of realizing that, not just mystically, but identificatorily, occultly, so we don't lose what each item or content of consciousness means in the world of illusion, It doesn't become a mass blur. Everything retains its function in the world of illusion, and yet the sameness or identicality of all things is perceived along with the distinctness and the function, which are seen, of course, as secondary to the identicality. So initiation then can be a second ray word. If we were to look here in Esoteric Psychology 1, and we were to, let's see, the science of initiation. Well, we're not going to find it that way. We're going to find associated word under city planning. But here it is. These are the each of the great rays has a form of teaching truth to humanity, which is its unique contribution. That's page 50 in Esoteric Psychology. It really would be worth going over this book in the same meticulous manner. Well, it seems meticulous to me. I know there are a lot of loose ends, of course. But each of the great rays has a form of teaching truth to humanity, which is its unique contribution, and in this way develops man by a system or technique which is qualified by the ray energy and is therefore specific and unique. And let me point out to you the modes of this group teaching, and here we have not the science of it, but the process of initiation as taught by the hierarchy of adepts. That's the higher expression for the second ray. And the lower expression is religion, but we'll see that in the sixth ray as well, won't we? Yes, churches and organized religions, Christianity and diversified religions, very much a connection with the sixth ray. And notice how Esoteric Psychology is connected with the fifth, the science of the soul, and modern educational systems and mental science, the lower expression. Now the first ray gives us diplomacy and politics, but the science of statesmanship and of government is the higher expression. And notice how communications are involved here. So there's no question that the World Wide Web was given to us in a way by this technique related to the third ray. And money and gold is the lower expression, the spread of that. Has a form of teaching truth to humanity. So rendering things vocal on the third ray line. The Masonic work, curiously, is related here to the fourth ray based on the formation of the hierarchy and is related to the second ray with its process of initiation. And then architectural construction, modern city planning, all of this is related to the fourth ray, I suppose, seeking harmony through the forms in which men find their habitat. And the seventh ray will be white magic and lower form spiritualism of phenomena. So the process of initiation is closely allied to the second ray. And the means by which the hierarchy functions is through love. It is the hierarchy of love, and one knows that when one feels the love energy. You know, one can forget that when in the realm of mind, which is the realm of personality in many respects, the realm of intelligence, and the realm which has been with us for a very long time, love is a new thing, at least as unfolding on this planet. And in the minds of many human beings who have been identified with the third aspect. But we remember that the rays of humanity either are now soul and personality 2 and 4, or soon will be. And then the outer court, the tabernacle in the desert. See, the second aspect has to do with the temple, and the first aspect with the Holy of Holies within the temple. But there is also an outer court, a tabernacle in the wilderness. It is humanity. It is exoteric. The third ray is always considered exoteric when considering the first two rays. And the first two rays rule the first two planes of any sevenfold system of planes. And the next five are exoteric and are ruled by the third ray. But we have Christ in us, the hope of glory, so the great being is within form, and the form will be glorified. So we have form, appearance, body, intelligence, individuality. But the glory is coming. And the glorification of the form is the transfiguration. The glorification of the form as transfiguration. So these are the analogies, the temple analogies in a way, the Holy of Holies, the holy place, and the outer court, and the tables of correspondences, of course, are very useful. Again, light is one of those factors which is ubiquitous, but especially associated with the second and third rays, and also in an intense form with the sixth ray. Yet, as we know, light is vibration, and every being is characterized by vibration, and according to the nature of that vibration, so will be the light of any being, whether it's a zodiacal lord or a ray lord. They all have their unique forms of light, produced by a frequency of a certain kind, a vibratory frequency, and this ends up being qualitative, telling us something about the quality of any great being. So we cannot find a being who exists who has not come to light. There will always be a light demonstration. But there is this interchange. Maybe the interchange between the second and third ray exists because at the present time they are really in the process of fusing in humanity and on our planet with its second ray soul and third ray personality, and in our solar system as well, which is carrying over so much of the third ray energy from the previous solar system and is now attempting to develop and express the cosmic consciousness, the cosmic soul. When you think about cosmic consciousness, it's the great lords of planets and stars and beyond who have it. It's not man, although man can have a huge expansion of consciousness, which, because he cannot co-measure so well, he calls it cosmic. So this, these three, the following terms distinguish the three rays with which we have been dealing, the following terms. And we've gone over them. Remember nevertheless, that these three are one. We always want to make discriminations, but with respect to the Trinity, in any divine Trinity, the three are one. Behind all of them stands forever the one who remains, transcendent and immanent also, greater than our whole and also, yet also within that whole. So via isolated unity, we detect and discover that transcendent, immanent whole. We really have to learn how to think in terms of fusion. The concrete mind separates things and ignores the transformational flow. That we're really dealing with one substance in many modes. And these modes are not isolated from each other. The many modes of the one substance are not isolated from each other. Maybe he's going to say a little bit about the other rays. He was going to say really very little, in a way. But he seems to want to mention something. Through ray 4, we learn to be at one with this eternal synthesis and will. The opposites are united. Through ray 5, we develop the means to understand the nature of that synthesis and will. I guess he's talking about, when he speaks of synthesis and will, he's talking about the transcendent, immanent one. When DK speaks of synthesis and will, he is, in this context, speaking of the transcendent one and the who is the immanent one as well. So through ray 4 we learn to be at one with this eternal synthesis and to reconcile all dissonances which prevent us from being at one in the eternal synthesis. And through ray 5, we develop the means to understand the nature, the manner of the energetic interchange in that synthesis. The manner of the energetic interchange in that great synthesis. That synthesis and will. Through ray 6, you know, different angles are being given on the rays, are they not, here? Through ray 6, we move forward to complete identification with the synthesis and will. And I suppose we had often thought that it would be ray 2 that would give us the complete identification, because we have just read, well, even ray 1, identification is here. Ray 6 somewhat reflects the first ray. They have much in common. But it's this moving forward into complete identification. Devotion leads to a complete merging with. It's, in a sense, a lower aspect of the second ray, a merging into. There's the overcoming of dualism, or the perception of dualism, through this ray which experiences the contents of consciousness in so dualistic a manner, this same dualism is overcome. We move forward to a complete identification with that synthesis or will. And through ray 7 we demonstrate on earth, demonstrate on earth the nature of that synthesis through the medium of the appearing form and the purpose of that underlying will. The purpose, the purpose at last appears through the appearance. Well, this is a very abbreviated statement. When you think about the kind of attention he's given to the other aspects of will, it would seem to be an advanced subject to be given to advanced students to work out the way these great ray beings express modes of will through different constellations and consequently through different planets, and anchor that will in a form which the forms of humanity can endure and abide and assimilate. We've been given a great passage from the one to the many, and all, you know, of course, throughout the books, we've been told how the many redirect their individual life into a series of fusions which lead to the one. And so, startlingly, at least for me, his last words on this subject, written written at the very close of the book, because what follows now is the appendix, and so the many are absorbed into the one. Well, this shows us that the method of procedure works in both directions, and that when we're dealing with these diagrams, we begin with the one about whom naught may be said, and we have the means of transmission, which takes us to Earth. Now, you know, if we were really to look more intricately at the descent of the energies, there would be all kinds of things on our planet, and even within the other planetary schemes, for instance, the various receiving and distributive chains in the scheme and the globes involved, which would fill in the detail. We don't know so much about the detail when it comes to the stars in the constellations, let's say Aries, Leo, or Capricorn, and we know something about three aspects of the solar logos. And as we begin to descend into our solar system, a little more detail emerges. If you think about it, it is charts like this that begin to show us some of the detail and the different globes involved in the transmission and chains involved in the transmission. So, this kind of map that we have here is simply a suggestive outline of the way in which the highest energies of our local cosmos system confer themselves upon lesser energy sources, which are their emanations, and develop a method of expressing through and through. So the highest and the lowest do actually meet. That's what this double diamond is showing us, this Dorje, that the highest and the lowest meet. And the highest, in this case, is the one about whom naught may be said, in whom the lords of constellations are as petals in his 12-petaled heart in the head center. But we know the constellations of the zodiac through the signs of the zodiac and the planets, they do affect little man and all the kingdoms here on this little globe. And gradually our consciousness grows to understand how this may be. When we're dealing with will, we might say that will is all about the passage of the energies and the patterns which the energies create and sustain and later destroy. We're dealing with movements, energy, force, movement. The factor of consciousness accompanying these movements is also very important, and with that consciousness, most of the texts we study with Master D.K. deal. But here, as in the last part of A Treatise on Cosmic Fire, here in the last part of Esoteric Astrology, he does deal with the prime mover and the great movements. The power that makes things to be as they are. Without this power, nothing would ever advance, and let's just say that purpose would never be achieved. There has to be power in the lower worlds. There must be directed power in the lower worlds if the archetype, or let's say heavenly archetype, is to be approximated. Otherwise, things just won't move. And without that movement, we will not have the arranging and designing of all interrelations so that they reflect the purpose which is from the beginning to the end. I think the will also sustains the archetypal purpose and keeps it as a constant factor from beginning to end. But meanwhile, in the mosaic world where the chaos is reigning and also the divine plan is seeking intelligently to reposition all factors, there is great activity, contributed to by the first ray and an aspect of itself, the third ray. The ray of arrangement, whereas the seventh ray is more the ray of accurate arrangement. The general impulse towards mutation is governed by the third ray. But accuracy in supervising that mutation and making sure that the building process is purposeful, that is more the product of the seventh ray. We little human beings, we are engaged in a huge system of energies, and we are ourselves an emanated energy unit in the One. Of course, the One is universal, but we cannot grasp that. We can't think galactically. We're very local thinkers, though the One about whom naught may be said, it's a protean term applied to many different levels of entity. But even applied to the great entity who uses constellations as chakras, it is the entity over a small space and for a small time, relatively considered. And yet, it is so expansive in a way that we can know really nothing about it. But all of our life is living and moving and having its being within this One about whom naught may be said. I'm sometimes called the Sirian system of seven major stars with a couple others accompanying, like Beta Centauri and maybe Sirius B. I've sometimes called it a One about whom naught may be said, level one, as if it's closer to us. And so much is hidden regarding the seven solar systems. D.K. says we cannot discuss it. But then, you know, he blinds it because about this system in which seven stars would exist, a constellation in which seven stars, major stars would exist, we can say a fair deal, but about the seven solar constellations as systems, of which our constellation as a system is one, about that we can say just about nothing. So there was this section in the book where we were dealing with, again, with systems, and you begin to wonder whether he wasn't talking about constellations within the one about whom naught may be said. The same term can mean more than one thing, and, you know, it's the concrete mind which wants one term to mean one thing and one thing only. And we do not get the diversity of applications to the many things that one symbol can stand for. And thus we are blinded to the reality of matter, energy, forms. We become confused because by our own direct experience we have not apprehended what these forms really are. Well, obviously, there are many things it's nice to know, and cosmic fire and esoteric astrology are full of things that are nice to know. Excuse me. But we have to be the intelligent participator in all of this web of interrelated energies, and to carry out our microcosmic purpose, which, of course, maps of this nature help us do. Here is the purpose. It's a transcendental purpose to be conveyed to the transmitting factors in our nature, the spiritual triad, and thereafter transmitted to the place where a kind of transformation occurs, a qualitative division. And this division within the soul, this transformative qualitative work, is then sent to the transfiguring centers which change our configuration and change the dimension in which we operate. I know it's a heck of a place to put it, but I will say that transfiguration is a change of the dimension in which we customarily work. It's a vast teaching. 30 years DK worked with Alice Bailey. What a labor for her. For him, a labor of love, as he said, and for her, a labor. In the days of the typewriter, she must have been very good. 7 pages of closely spaced type every session, something like that. And what is presented is the seed of many further apprehensions. Those who ponder on the teaching find what lies behind what DK did present. The presentation itself, though vast, is the merest seed of what can be apprehended when the hints are followed and the pondering goes in great depth. So we have this teaching which turns upon itself. It re-aspects all of itself. Every aspect of it comes into relation with every other aspect. It is, we have an interactive teaching. All aspects are meant to come into mutual aspectual relationship with all other aspects. I mean, I'm not just talking the language of astrology here. An aspect is how a particular energy touches and affects another energy. And there is ultimately a seamless interrelation which is presented in the archetypal purpose, but yet to be achieved. It already is, because purpose is. But the reflection of that purpose in the chaotic worlds, or I call them the mosaic worlds, the particulate worlds, is not yet worked out. And we are, for whatever reason that the One decrees, we as extensions of that One are working out the reflection. In the mosaic worlds, we are actually becoming, in our extensions, we are becoming the reflection of the archetypal purpose. God is what it is and goes forth in emanative extension to become the reflection of what it is also, and then to abstract and withdraw and absorb that reflection back into what it always has been. I suppose we'll understand more of the reason for all this as we realize our nature as spirit more fully. Right now, many of us are lost in this maze of illusion. All is illusion, O dweller in the shadows. Come forth into the light of day. Display the hidden glory of the Blessed One, the glory of the One and Only. The glory and the truth will rapidly destroy that which has veiled the truth. The prisoner can go free. So many of us are lost. Well, we're all relatively lost. We're wandering in illusion until the ninth initiation, and then really, from another perspective, the whole universe is illusion. It is the Mahamaya. And in the midst of all this, having pervaded the universe with a fragment of myself, I remain. In the midst of all this, unable to escape from the universe or from the presentation in consciousness that is the universe, we have to be that which we are in the midst of the Maya. It's apparently a third ray technique we've been seeing to discover what one is in the midst of that which one is not. Well, we are all things, glibly said, platitudinously said, but in the midst of the apparency of what we are not, we have to be very sure of what we are, and we cannot escape this duality. That is our task, to bring the highest realization through, even in the most stultifying circumstances. This will take time, and this is what makes the initiate of man. Well, I'll say this. We're at the end. I'll just call it the end of esoteric astrology. Adventure number 148A, and beginning of esoteric astrology adventure number 149A, the appendix. But isn't it beautiful how DK ends this 635 pages of presentation with, "And so the many are absorbed into the One." This is about identification, which demands realization, esoteric experience, and absorption into the whole. Of this absorption, he knows a great deal, but he doesn't spend a great deal of time talking about it. Not the way some of the Buddhists do, and some of those that are forever emphasizing the oneness. He deals with the manner of handling the illusion in such a way that the absorption into the One will occur. But the illusion is complex, it is diverse, it needs to be correctly understood if it will become possible to enter that which is not illusion, even whilst being in the presence of illusion, though not identifying with it. Our problem in the maze is that we identify with illusion. But one day, even all this phantasmagoria, says the Tibetan, is seen as it is. Even associated persons are seen as the phantasmagoria. And we learn detachment, disidentification, and re-identification with the one, substanding all things. That's what we're in the process of learning. Well, these programs are being prepared for you with the help of my friend Brett, and they'll be available. I know they're a big download, but the time will come soon when they will be available in DVD sets, if your machines can play the DVDs, hopefully. And it'll be much easier to access, and for every one of them, there'll be a little summary. I've been summarizing all these programs lately. In the beginning, I just gave the page numbers, but I will take up a pretty big work of going back and summarizing what I've done. Obviously, there's a lot of discussion which is not in the book. And I simply, when I make the summaries, I can't even remember all of what I've discussed. So it will be a richer experience, actually, to listen and work with the programs than simply reading the short, abbreviated summaries. But the hope is that there will be presented to the thinking esoteric community a method of helping to get Master DK's sense of the interplay of all these energies closer to the mind of all who participate and read and listen and think. Make it more a factor within the mind so that we can handle this world of illusion in an intelligent way and meanwhile recognize the unity of all the apparent chaos. We are extricating ourselves from the maze, and in a great sense, esoteric astrology is Ariadne's thread. Certainly for those people who have the third ray, and so many of us have been raised in the moon chain system, or earlier, that we can use esoteric astrology as the thread. So what I'm going to do now is sound the great invocation, which will bring us to the end of our work. And then, at a time that is convenient and possible, go on to the appendix, which will work to help summarize much of what we have done. And so here we go with the great invocation, the most important instrument we have at this time for correct preparation for the externalization of the hierarchy and the reappearance of the Christ. And I'm sure it will be used for many years throughout the Aquarian Age, because there's much to be done here, stanza by stanza. And we will be working out the divine plan throughout the Aquarian Age. And until the judgment day comes, we will still have this contest with the forces of obstruction. And it will take place on our planet, even though the origin of these forces is cosmic. So this invocation will have great utility for a long time. From the point of light, within the mind of God, let light stream forth into the minds of men. Let light descend on earth. From the point of love within the heart of God, let love stream forth into the hearts of men. May Christ return to earth. From the center where the will of God is known, let purpose guide the little wills of men, the purpose which the masters know and serve. From the center which we call the race of men, let the plan of love and light work out, and may it seal the door where evil dwells. Let light and love and power restore the plan on earth. Okay, friends, it's been fun working with you. We're not done yet. We have the appendix to go, and then my proposal is to go on with the egoic lotus, all the material I've gathered there through many classes, and also the second part of the rays and the initiations. The first part is already done in terms of commentary written, although I wish I could talk it. And the last part of Cosmic Fire, spoken, I hope, the last 100 pages or so, and then sections from the old commentary, which need interpretation. Not that I have the last word on that, but at least possibly can offer something which will fertilize the mind and give thought. And then, if it's possible, might be able to do a book on physiognomy, one of these books where we look closely at the face of people and see the rays expressing through the face, if we can, the rays and the science. That's kind of what I'm looking forward to. And meanwhile, I don't know when you'll be listening to this, but if the Moria Federation is still going as a bridge towards the future new esoteric schools, I hope you'll give it every consideration, because Master Moria is the head of all esoteric schools and organizations, and that great triangle of Master M, Master KH, and DK is doing a huge work in bringing the ageless wisdom to humanity, bringing it closer, even though some of the other masters had their doubts. I hope we will prove worthy of that approach which they've made possible, the approach to us which they have undertaken. I hope we will all recommit ourselves to an assimilation of the ageless wisdom and its use in service of the divine plan for the sake of the purpose which is conceived by our great planetary logos and beyond. So, meanwhile then, although it may be a little later today that I get going on the appendix, I'll say goodbye for the moment. And we'll hope that for all the rambling and occasional confusion and deep doubt, occasionally as I get into deep waters, that has been present in all of this commentary, that you'll have some value from it. Maybe one day it'll all be edited up, and the better things that have been said in it will be consolidated, so that you won't have to listen to 250 or 300 hours of the spoken word. All right, friends, bye-bye. We'll see you soon. On to the next.